Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Todd Feinberg, now 2 till 6 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Todd with you, WTIC. Friday. Hallelujah. First hour on Fridays now, of late. We normally start off with a rant hour. Special curveball at you today. We're going to do the rants during the second hour today. Then during the last hour, we will do our food hour, which is known as Order Up. That's coming your way on WTIC during the 5 o'clock hour. Don't forget to call the rant line. 860-751-4698. We're going to talk immigration. It's a mess. I think it was the first mess of the Biden administration because he wanted it to be. He wanted to virtue signal on what a softy he was, and that created a lot of problems. We're going to talk about it right now with Professor Lawrence Mead. He is a professor of politics at New York University, the author of Burdens of Freedom, Cultural Differences, and American Power. Larry, welcome to WTIC.
My pleasure.
Talk to us about immigration and what is going on with the Biden administration. First off, did he make a mess? Is it true that all kinds of bad stuff started happening with his arrival? Just was his arrival as a signal to people that, okay, it's going to be easier to get in, so come on down.
That is one big factor. It's no question that Biden indicated that he was going to be more lenient about immigration than Trump. So that encouraged more people to come to the border. I think that's clearly a big factor. But there are two other factors. One of them is that the legal structure in immigration has really broken down. The rules, in theory, apply to everybody trying to cross the border. You can't cross illegally. But it turns out there are many ways to cross illegally and get away with it. Especially the asylum system allows anybody to cross illegally and then claim that they're subject to persecution in their home country and get to stay. And the claims are adjudicated later. Most of those claims are disallowed by the courts. However, that's enough time for the immigrants to get into the country and become invisible. So they then wait to be legalized by politicians in Washington. So that's
how did we get in this situation where we have to let them into the country and then release them?
Well, the numbers are such, in theory, they should be incarcerated until their claims are adjudicated. But there are many too many to allow that. And also many of them bring children and the children can't be incarcerated. And so the end of what that does is the whole family then has to be allowed to go native until their claims come to court. But at that point, they may or may not comply. They may not show up for their hearing. And even if they're found to be in violation and they should go home, they cannot be found. So they become illegals. And there are many more of them. There's something like 11 million illegals in the country. So the asylum system operates like an open door. Whether or not your claims are approved, you get to stay in the country. So that's a major legal problem. I think asylum should be abolished. We should simply allow nobody into the country unless their claims are approved before they come here. You shouldn't be allowed to come to the country and remain while your claims are adjudicated.
But don't we have treaty obligations or some kind of international agreements obligate us to this?
We do. We would have to violate that treaty or renegotiate it. We're not alone in this problem. Other countries in Europe also face claims to asylum that are abusive, which people simply come into the country illegally and claim asylum, and they say whatever they want to say about their conditions at home, and those claims cannot be verified independently. So the judges have to make judgments about whether they're telling the truth or not. And even if they're telling the truth, the numbers are such as to vastly exceed anything that asylum was supposed to do. It was supposed to apply to a few people who were being unjustly persecuted by governments. But the more normal situation today is that the government has collapsed. And what they're suffering from is simply chaos and rule by drug gangs and other unofficial forces. So this is not what asylum is supposed to deal with. And I mean, I would still allow there to be refugees. The refugees are another group which, however, do have to prove their claims before they come into the country. So I would still allow that, although it would reduce the numbers.
But you said before you would that you would just disobey the agreements,
yes,
and stop them from coming in, which is,
yes,
what a leader, you would expect a leader to do when there's a crisis, is fix the crisis and forget about who's.
No. I mean, right now there's a crisis at the border with Belarus and Poland, in which thousands of migrants are trying to get into the European Union, and the same issues apply there. So we have to recognize that the asylum system was intended for much smaller numbers than we actually have today.
Yeah, but why do Democrats like it this way? They won't do the things you're talking about, the obvious things you would do to protect.
They are sentimental. They think everyone has a right to come to America, and they don't realize the numbers make that completely impossible. And they also have some self-interest in this because they believe that low-income migrants come to America will become citizens and vote for them. So there's a belief here that it's in their interest. But I think the strongest force is simply the presumption that desperate people from poor countries have a right to come to America simply for that reason, because they're desperate. And indeed, our moral traditions give some basis for that. We actually have a tradition of accepting people who come from other countries who are in desperate situations. And that is morally indeed endorsed by the Bible. So it isn't as if we have no basis.
Nobody says you have to self-destruct. Nobody says you can't have rational guidelines for those numbers. Nobody says that when the number of people coming shifts to a point where it's unsustainable and it's going to destroy the host, that you have to keep hosting.
Yeah, you do. No, the theologians have not, to my knowledge, set any limits on this obligation. I mean, in fact, something like 700 million people worldwide would like to come to the Western world, and such numbers would destroy our societies. And theologians, as far as I know, have not ever, indeed nobody who deals with immigration has been willing to set limits. That obligation is open-ended, and it's one of many obligations that make it a travesty to say that America is a free country. On the contrary, we bear obligations for the entire rest of the world that they're quite willing to claim and come here. And it is inconceivable that Americans can set some limits. Well, we have to set limits, and people are going to be upset by that.
Wait, whose voice were you speaking in? It's inconceivable.
Well, it's inconceivable because the numbers are just excessive, and therefore we can't imagine taking in these numbers.
Oh, no, it's inconceivable that we take them all, but the setting limits part.
No, that isn't part of the, as far as I understand it, that isn't part of the treaty. Asylum has no limits in it.
Yeah, well, that's insanity. Nobody should sign treaties like that.
Okay, and then we should renegotiate the treaty.
We're talking to Lawrence Mead. He's a professor of politics at New York University. Is that the same as being a political science professor, or is that different?
It is still, my department is called politics, but it is political science.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure you didn't have some whole different field.
No.
So this is perplexing for... I keep waiting for the Democrats to have to pay a price for being the open borders policy, because it is wreaking havoc, as so many of their policies are.
Well, they actually have paid a price for this in previous elections, and they'll pay a price next year. They're clearly they're in denial about this. I think it's pretty clear they're going to pay a price. The public, although it is sympathetic to immigrants at an individual level, it doesn't want the kind of open border that we have. But there's
Is that causing the peeling off of some Hispanic voters, or does it play a role?
Hispanics, in the last election in 2020, Hispanics voted quite heavily for Trump. Now, that may have been elements among Hispanics that are really not what we're talking about. There's a large Cuban element in Florida, for example. Those are people who are mostly middle class who came from Cuba.
But they're always Republican voters. It was more around Texas.
But they're included in the Hispanic group, however. The other groups are those from Mexico and Central America, and they are very definitely more troubled, and they are not doing well, and there's no way in which you can say that their numbers should be unlimited. But again, the law does not favor this. The law would have to be changed. It would have to be like refugees. The refugees are kind of like asylum. They also have to prove that they're persecuted in their home country, but they have to do it before they come rather than after they come. That's the big difference. So they cannot exploit the situation. Also, countries are allowed to set limits on refugees, and they're not allowed to set limits, to my knowledge, on asylum claims. So that is the big legal loophole now.
Well, it seems like we have to correct that situation, and that Democrats will have to pay a price that's much heavier, I think, because this is one of our big problems, is that border. And it's been devastating for the Biden administration, I think, when linked up with the other things that have been a mess since the president took office. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking with Professor Lawrence Mead from New York University. More coming up in just a moment on WTIC.
Are you on Instagram? So are we. Follow us at WTIC 1080.
WTIC, we're talking about immigration, which is just such a difficult issue. But I think mostly it's difficult because Democrats want as many people pouring in from south of the border in particular as possible. We're talking with Larry Mead, a professor of politics at New York University. His book is Burdens of Freedom, Cultural Difference and American Power. So why do we have to be insane about immigration? Like, the idea that whoever has closest proximity should get the largest numbers coming in, that's no way to run an immigration system.
Well, that's not what's happening. I mean, many of the immigrants today are coming from Central America. And in terms of asylum, they actually are supposed to go to the first reasonably safe country, which would be Mexico. But they don't want to go there. They want to come to America, which is much richer.
Well, they have proximity in that they can get to our border, as opposed to us having a system of picking people.
Yeah.
Well, this brings us back to, what was it, 1965, the Immigration Act that Ted Kennedy. And what was the premise? What was the argument they made for why we shouldn't be taking the people who are best for us?
But they didn't actually face it. Back then, the main goal of the reform of 65 was to abolish the national origin system, which set preferences for people coming from Europe. And that was thought to be old-fashioned and racist. And because this was the civil rights era, the enlightened thing to do, it seemed, was simply to abolish national origins and then set overall limits for the Eastern Hemisphere and the Western Hemisphere, and a lot of other changes, one of which was to expand legal immigration for family reunification.
But I bring it up because I think there is an argument, since we don't have babies anymore in America to speak of, there is an argument for immigration, but it can't be the poorest people from the poorest places least equipped to deal with our society.
Those are the ones who want to come. And the more skilled, more established people would all be coming from Western Europe, where we have to compete for those groups. They are not necessarily going to prefer America.
But we nevertheless have a booming tech sector. We have people from all over the world who want to come and work here, who have a difficult time getting around
although there are many other legal bases for immigration, including various groups that come to serve business or have technical qualifications or who come to American universities, there's 1,000 different ways to enter legally. And those also have to be cut back, especially family reunification. So the only problem is not the illegals. It's really two problems. There's the illegals, and then there's various bases for legal entry, which are excessive, and which I think the most important is family reunification, but there are others too, like birthright citizenship. The fact that children come who are born in America are automatically given citizenship. And that, in effect, means that their families also have secure status here and cannot be deported.
All right. So you've worked this all out. Let's get the Lawrence Mead plan. If you've got the magic wand to fix immigration in America, what's your wish while you wave it?
The main thing that I would do is to cut the amount of immigration. I think that the threatening part is that immigration is beyond the level of where we have any hope to assimilate people to our way of life. So we should cut the numbers in half. And I would do that primarily by, first of all, eliminating illegal immigration by requiring that employers certify that their workers are legal. Right now, they don't have to do that, really. They can hire illegals and then claim they didn't know they were illegal. Whereas there's something called the E-Verify system, which essentially verifies whether you're a legal worker. It isn't mandated now for most hires, but it should be. And if you did that—
Who is that mandated for?
There are subgroups that still, I think it's government employees have to deal with that. And there are a couple of other subgroups, or maybe the military, I'm not sure.
So we have the system. All we'd have to do is throw a switch and say everybody has to go through this bottleneck.
And that would mean that employers could be held accountable for hiring illegals the way they can't now.
Because they could in one day find out.
Yes. And they'd have to find out. And then also you could know who's illegal and thereby, if necessary, deport them. But you wouldn't have to deport most. They would have to leave because they wouldn't have any way to make an income. So that's the first thing I would do. I would also cut legal immigration by reducing the grounds for family reunification. Right now, you can bring in many family members.
Yes, that's craziness.
And I would limit that to spouses and minor children, not adult children, not parents. You can't
aunts and uncles, cousins. Family.
Yeah. So I would do that. I would also abolish birthright citizenship. Many people think it's mandated by the 14th Amendment, but the best advice I've seen is that that isn't true. And Congress could set limits to that. And of course, I would not have an amnesty. I wouldn't allow wholesale legalization of the illegals. I think that would be an outrage. I mean, that would essentially trash any notion that we believe in the rule of law. And I can't imagine how that could ever be accepted by the American public. So these are steps that would cut the numbers very sharply. And that's the main thing, to cut the numbers so that people have to adjust to the mainstream culture. And they would over time, but it would take a while because the cultural difference between today's immigrants and the mainstream society is much greater than it was 100 years ago, when most of the immigrants are coming from Europe. So we have to do that. Otherwise, we're going to be creating a very different society in our midst that is not an individualist society. It's going to show the features of the non-West, which are not those we want, at least not in these numbers.
Well, we're having that problem with our own children going to school here now. Forget about the people coming in from other countries. But you're right. If we the idea of assimilation is it has to the flow of people has to be slow enough and steady so that over time you are building up assimilated people who believe in the American system.
Yeah. And the key thing they have to assimilate, it seems to me, is an individualist culture. We didn't really perceive that as a problem 100 years ago because everybody more or less had it coming in because they were coming from Europe. And you could say there was a kind of universal personality where people come to America and then they immediately hit the ground running and go out to get ahead. No, that isn't the way it is today. Most of the immigrants are coming here to survive, and they're much more passive and reactive to their situation than was true for the Europeans. And that reflects the cultural difference between the West and the non-West. So what we can't have is immigrant primarily consisting of people who are coming here merely to survive and don't have broader goals than that. We want people who are interested in coming to a free country with the obligations that that implies. They're not coming for that now. They're coming for freedom in some immediate sense of getting away from chaos, but they're usually not coming because they want to be free people. In fact, if they were, the countries they're coming from would be very different than they are. They'd be much more like Europe, and they're not. They're not that way. So we have to recognize this large difference in way of life between the West and the non-West. And
we should treat it as an important decision about who
has
to come, which we don't. All right, we've got to wrap it up. Professor Lawrence Mead, professor of politics at New York University, author of Burdens of Freedom, Cultural Differences in American Power. And you also host a podcast, Poverty and Culture.
Yes.
I'll check that out. I look forward to it. I love listening to podcasts. All right, thank you, sir, for being here.
Bye-bye.
Let's get a news update. We'll talk more after that. We've got a lot of time still to go on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi, tomorrow morning, 11 till noon, on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
WTIC on a Friday. Yes, Fridays we normally start off with what? It's confusing because we change. It's the only day of the week we do rants during the first hour. But instead of doing rants today during the 2 o'clock hour, we're going to do them during the 3 o'clock hour. And that's why things don't sound quite the way you expected. Rants during the 3 o'clock hour today, then during the last hour, order up is coming your way. Now, we're going to talk with Red Janke. You know Red. He's here every week. Find Red at the-red-line.com. The-red-line.com. That's Red's website. You'll find his columns there. He writes, you'll find his columns also in newspapers around the state from time to time because he syndicates. But his material also is posted at the-red-line.com, as are columns from other people. And we're going to talk with Red about the new drugs, the new pills, the antivirals coming out for COVID. Red is going to explain how this changes the whole deal. This changes the whole paradigm with the vaccine. It's now a very different calculation, isn't it, Red?
Yes, Todd, absolutely. And let's begin because it's kind of entertaining, the rapid fire events that unfolded last week into this week. So on last Thursday, President Biden announced the dates, the effective dates for his vaccine mandates, mandating that all businesses must require their employees to be vaccinated. Otherwise, the business pays really very hefty fines per incident per day. Healthcare providers were required by the CDC to or the CMS, Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, anyone receiving any money under either Medicaid or Medicare, any institutional provider of healthcare services, had to have all of their employees vaccinated. Well, on Friday, Pfizer announces a new antiviral treatment pill for COVID-19 that is 89% effective. And let's focus on that in particular. That is a, this is not a vaccine. This is a treatment pill, which means if you do get COVID and you take the pill, it will prevent you from getting serious illness, serious in terms of hospitalization. If you take the pill, you won't need to be hospitalized. And in terms of mortality, you won't die.
Right, which is interesting because the vaccine, one of the benefits of the vaccine that is touted is that it provides those same benefits.
Right. So let's go through the logic. Now we have two lines of defense against the virus. First, we have vaccination. And then we have a pill that if, despite being vaccinated, you contract the virus, the pill will prevent 89% of the time any serious illness. So why do we need a vaccine mandate? And the underlying purpose, the implied purpose of the mandates is and can only be to protect the vaccinated from those who are unvaccinated. Well, the logic has always been somewhat weak and self-contradictory, because if the vaccine is effective, you run no risk of infection, whether it be from an unvaccinated person or anything else.
Right, it would make no difference.
Yeah. So now the logic is even more powerful. If you are vaccinated and the pills available, there's virtually no risk of your becoming infected, either from unvaccinated people or anyone else. So there's really no purpose to the vax mandate. On top of that, it's really a trifecta, because first you have the vaccine, then we've gravitated to booster shots, and now we have the pill, the treatment pill. Now let's analogize that to the flu shot. The flu shot is an annual shot, and the flu shot against the seasonal flu is the equivalent of a booster. So when you get your flu shot, you're really getting a booster, because last year's shot has lost its efficacy. Its power has waned. So this year's shot is a booster. It boosts you back up in terms of your resistance. It's also calibrated to address both the recurring variants and potentially new variants of the flu.
Right.
Analogize that to the Delta virus. We're doing the same thing with COVID. And the flu each year is never 100% effective. There's always some risk. Now, the flu shot, there's no mandate, of course, does not have the backup that Pfizer's new pill provides. So the flu shot, if you get the flu, there's no flu pill. Here we have a COVID-19 pill. There is no basis for a vaccine mandate.
Well, okay,
so
hang on.
Thursday, President Biden announces his mandate, the effective dates of it. Friday, Pfizer announces its pill, which it really got insufficient coverage and acclaim, because it's a remarkable development. And then on Saturday, the Fifth District U.S. Court in New Orleans stayed Biden's mandate. So it's not effective until that stay is litigated, and the Biden administration was ordered to answer by Monday afternoon, which it did. And it cited past history. I looked at their brief in answer to the stay and asking for the lifting of the stay. And they're fighting the last war. Of course, 750,000 Americans have died of COVID or died with COVID as one of their contributing causes of death. Well, that says nothing about a mandate in the future. And we're on the backside, at least at this point, of the pandemic. And it's hard to believe that we're not on the backside on a long-term basis, because we have, again, very effective vaccines. We're delivering boosters, and we have a treatment pill.
All right, so the picture you're painting the picture you're painting is that the policy we're now following is obsolete, and the idea that we're just implementing mandates for kids and extending the vaccine out is ignoring the fact that if we were starting fresh today, if we had these drugs and these treatments and this vaccine, and COVID arrived with us in possession of those things, we would not follow the course that we're following now, and there'd be no reason to.
Well, if we had the vaccine, arrayed both in terms of the initial vaccination and scheduled boosters, and we had the treatment pill, there would have been no reason to shut down the economy.
Yes, whatsoever. But I'm talking about the drug protocols. What would...
Yeah, and there would have been 750,000 Americans would not have died.
Right, but what would the policy be with regard to the options of vaccine and drug treatments? Would we ignore the vaccine if we were starting fresh today and just tell everyone there's a pill? If you get exposed to this, come take a pill?
I think you offer people a choice and they make their own choice, because of course, if you rely on the pill, you are going to contract the illness. So some people would decide, I don't even want to get a mild.
But that's also possible with the vaccine, especially after, you know, if you're looking at it long term, you need regular boosters on the vaccine, presumably.
Right. And we have that.
But you're asking, but then the option is not just a one-off vaccine, but it's a lifetime, perhaps, of kind of flu vaccine treatments versus taking a pill retroactively.
Right. Not versus, you could do both. I mean, if you have a breakthrough infection, you have been vaccinated. Let's even posit that you have been vaccinated and you've gotten the booster and you still become infected.
Yeah.
You've got the pill. So there are three lines of defense. And people can choose their own risk profile. Somebody who does not want to be vaccinated can rely upon the pill.
It's and somebody with comorbidities or seniors or whatever, the vaccine still makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. No, we're talking about
I'm not arguing against the vaccine. I'm somewhat astounded by people not wanting to get vaccinated. I see the vaccine as a godsend, as the expression and manifestation of amazing American scientific and pharmaceutical
Well, genius. It is that, but the idea
this was done in less than a year.
Yeah. No, that's pretty exciting. All right. Hang on, Red. We'll talk more about this. Red Janke is here, the-red-line.com. Quick break. We'll talk more about this. Stay with us on WTIC.
Trust us. You don't want to ask Alexa what 10 to the power of 308 is, but you could ask her to play WTIC News Talk 1080. That's safe.
Todd here. We're talking with Red Janke, the-red-line.com. You can find Red's columns there. He also posts other bits of information and other people's columns that he views as being of interest. And we're talking about how the new drugs might change the protocol moving forward with how people respond to COVID. And that might mean that, if you're in a vulnerable group, you might still want to be vaccinated. But given that the vaccines wane and you have to go into a booster protocol, that puts a little more weight, I think, on somebody who's younger, say, to skip the vaccines and use the drugs as a backup treatment. Is that how you're looking at it, Red?
No, actually, that's a possibility. The first point is that I think the array of original vaccine, booster shot, and pill allows individuals to choose their own risk profile. As you just said, perhaps there are younger people who don't want to be vaccinated. They can rely upon the pill alone. Again, as announced last Friday, Pfizer has a breakthrough of amazing science. It is a COVID-19 pill that is 89% effective. So if you contract the virus, you take the pill, and 89% of the time it prevents serious illness. You don't have to go to the hospital. You run no risk of mortality. The pill you take at home, so there's no burdening of the healthcare system. Remember bending the curve? There's nothing about bending the curve, because no one is going to the hospital who's taking the pill. They are prescribed the pill and they take it at home.
Yep.
And it's effective at home.
Well, so that's certainly bad news for the politicians.
It's an array of options for an individual, but on a public policy basis, okay, there is no, I maintain there's the logic has completely disappeared for a vaccine mandate. We just don't need it. There are three lines of defense. First, original vaccine. Second, booster. Third, pill. And if the government wants to do anything, it should offer a bounty for getting vaccinated. not in order to get vaccinated, but say, you know, you get we've been handing out money all over the place. Why not offer people $500 to get vaccinated if they haven't been already? Or give people who have been vaccinated a $500 tax credit on their tax return. Give people an incentive, a positive incentive, to do the right thing or the public-spirited thing. Don't exercise dictatorial power of the state. Not only is the logic not there, but it is dangerous territory to be ordering people to follow certain medical protocols. And this is their body. And since with the vaccine and the booster and the pill, the people who are vaccinated have absolutely no exposure and risk to the unvaccinated. They have the protection of the vaccines, they can get the booster, and the third line of defense is the pill. So the notion that the unvaccinated are threatening the vaccinated has completely disappeared. It is just no longer a logical or scientific truth or condition.
The argument that this is the, what is it they say? This is the disease of the unvaccinated, a crisis of the unvaccinated, but it isn't with the pills.
Even the unvaccinated are protected by the pill, because if you don't get vaccinated, you contract COVID, and you take the pill within the first 3 or 4 days of virus symptoms, you are protected 89% of the time. The Pfizer pill was in clinical trials. The results were so astounding, they broke off the trial early, and they've applied for emergency use authorization, or they're about to. I don't know where they are in the approval process with the FDA. But this is just as remarkable as the development of the vaccine. A pill that it's not a cure outright, but it is a preventative. It's an after the fact preventative. That's amazing. There's no such thing for the seasonal flu. If you get the flu shot, you get a quote breakthrough case of the seasonal flu. There's no pill you can take.
Right.
Here we have a pill you can take.
Yeah.
I think that's quite astounding.
It's pretty good news.
Yeah.
All right, Red, we've got 30 seconds. Closing thought?
Closing thoughts. I hope that the Fifth Circuit New Orleans will maintain its stay on the vaccine mandate and cite the science.
Red Janke is at the-red-line.com. You can find his columns there. You can find other people's columns there. Red Janke, nice to have you here. Thank you, sir.
Hey, Todd, my pleasure.
It's Friday, and we moved the rants today from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock, just to add a little confusion, which we will get to coming up after news on WTIC News Talk 1080.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.